Here at Strange Magic, Amanda and I talk about our views on tarot and the ways in which we practice magic.
And we understand that other people have different ways of practicing and different interpretations of the tarot, and that's totally okay.
Take what you'd like and leave the rest. Hi, Amanda. How are you this
week?
I'm
really good, and I'm happy to be here with you because today we're going to be talking about making our tarot practices inclusive, and that's something we both really care a lot about. So why don't we start off, though, with some caveats. Sarah and I know not all of our listeners are white, but since white people are responsible for dismantling white supremacy, we feel that it's essential to address it on this podcast.
Right. So this episode has come out of a lot of conversations that you and I have had over the year or so that we've been in deep dialogue with one another about all things tarot, art, seeing clients,
politics, reality, Los Angeles, interpersonal relationships, racism, sexism,
homophobia,
classism,
transphobia,
all of the above,
capitalism, all the fun, hard, challenging things that we're all in. And we have gotten a lot of feedback on the reviews of the show that people do like having us discuss the topics of having an inclusive practice, thinking about social justice themes, thinking about how to maybe make our tarot practice more queer or more feminist or more mindful or all of the things. So we thought that we would take this episode to kind of just gently begin having a dialogue about some of these practices. So before we get into some topics and themes, there's a couple of precursors here.
Yes. I think it's a great sign that people have been responding to that because it means that people really want to talk about those things and are going into territories that, you know, people have resisted for a long time. And it also signals, I think, that there's like a lot of confusion around these issues. And so we just want to start off by saying, at least I do, that I want to start off by saying I am imperfect. I do not have all the answers, nor do I have any answers. For me, I really wanted to do this episode just to try and broach some difficult topics about how to make our practices and our lives more fair, inclusive, and integrity with what we believe in. And I make mistakes all the time about these issues regarding race, class, gender, physical ability, all those things. I can listen to episodes that we have done and cringe about things that I said. I can go back and read posts that I've written and think, oh, I wish that I would have changed that. I feel like I'm constantly evolving. And what's more important, though, than I think than just sort of being right or like nailing it all the time is that even if we're uncomfortable or we know that we might make mistakes, which I know I will, that we continue to do this work because it's really important work.
Absolutely. And, you know, to your earlier point, Amanda, I also was really heartened to hear feedback from people listening to our podcast who liked the fact that we talked about these issues, because to me, it also means that there are a lot of people out there that care. They care about these subjects. They want to have a caring, inclusive practice. They want to or have a caring, inclusive life, you know, because this is all connected. So it's really heartening to me to know that there are so many other wonderful, beautiful, lovely people out there thinking about these topics. Also, going off what you said about being a work in progress, you know, when you're listening to this podcast, gentle listener who is listening right now, this podcast is just a snapshot of where we are now around some things we're deciding to talk about. So some of our points of view are probably going to change, maybe next week, maybe in a year. And some of the topics not discussed, maybe we'll end up discussing down the road. But, you know, we want to keep this in podcast format. We want to keep it to just some basic topics. And we want to point out that we're working through all of this right now. I make mistakes probably every day. It's very similar to you. I'm always looking to learn. I'm always looking to do better. This is just kind of a snapshot of some of the things we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to touch on why it's so important. You know, I think both of us agree that in the spiritual community, there's a lot of kind of wanting to only focus on the beautiful, the easy, like the good things, the love and light. And that's something that both Sarah and I are really not about, because we just don't feel like ignoring problems makes them go away. You know, the consequences of not wrestling with the difficult stuff are so horrifying. You know, all forms of oppression, like people being locked up in prison, like kids being gassed, enslavement of people, like people losing their homes. So those are issues that I believe strongly spiritual people need to really wrestle with and take seriously, because just, you know, having a positive attitude is not gonna change that. So my hope for us today is that we can be brave and diligent and think carefully and get honest with ourselves and be respectful and really just listen and pay attention and just try and be honest and act with integrity and kindness. And I also want to note that as a white woman, I do not feel qualified to do much more than interrogate my own internalized racism, listen to people of color, and show up to do the necessary work. Like, I do not feel like I'm here to educate you about racism in particular. But at the end of the episode and in the show notes, we're going to give some suggestions for people you can listen to who have devoted their lives to doing decolonialist work and work against white supremacy, and people of color who we strongly urge you to follow and support financially with your time and your attention.
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking about doing this episode and I totally had this moment of, well, I'm a white person. You know, I don't have the right to be talking about any of this. So much of the things that I do that you could categorize as activism includes being quiet, listening, uplifting other voices who live with racism and other forms of oppression in their daily life, and giving them money, you know, and supporting them in other ways as well, emotionally, with my time, with my energy, with my resources, all of those things. However, you know, I think it's important for us to have these discussions. Like you, Amanda, I'm still learning. I don't consider myself an educator about any of these topics, but I do care. I think that anyone who is seeing clients, right?
Yeah.
You have to think about these issues, these intersectionalities. A tarot reading does not happen in a vacuum where there are only angels and, you know, clouds and seraphim and all of these things. Like, so many of the tarot readings that I give are so much about life and living and people's lived experiences, which includes really, really hard things like trauma, oppression, systemic oppression, you know, in particular. So if we're seeing clients in a practice, whether it's with Reiki or an herbalism practice,
or for teachers or whatever, I mean, we're interfacing with the world.
Yeah, we all have to be thinking about these things, particularly as white people, you know. And on that note, if you are a white person and you're listening to this episode, and if things that we're talking about make you feel uncomfortable, or you want to turn it off, or you have a very visceral reaction, like wanting to shut down, feeling ashamed, feeling defensive, I do encourage you to keep listening and to sit in that defensiveness or prickliness or uncomfortableness, breathe through it. And I encourage you to let these feelings pass. And then, you know, take time. If something stuck with you or you were really adverse to something, formulate your own ideas, do your own interrogation, do your own reading, your own research, have conversations with your own peers about your thoughts around these matters so that you can come to a place of wanting to cause less harm in the world.
Yes, yes. So, and I really want to piggyback on that too, Sarah. Yes, stick with the discomfort. It's so important, and it's really the most important work that we can be doing in our lives right now, is to wrestle with these things if we want to live on this planet. Also, I really want to encourage you that if you do feel uncomfortable with something that we say about queer folks or people of color or differently abled people, take a moment. Like, I just want you to maybe think, reconsider kind of going to ask your Black friend or something what they think about it, unless they bring it up to you, because it's not their job to be your encyclopedia about race or about queerness. And they might not want to speak for, like, they might not want to be like, now, okay, you talk to your Black friend about race, and so now you have permission to say whatever they say, like they are speaking as individuals and maybe they don't want to talk about it with you. And maybe if they like you, they will want to be nice to you and like won't want to like set a boundary with you. So really try and be respectful and maybe try and wrestle with these issues if they come up for you and cause you stress with someone who offers or volunteers to do that or brings it up with you rather than just kind of going and sort of forcing that on someone who might be exhausted from having to talk about it all the time.
Process your white feelings with other white people. And there are no end to resources, the internet, books. We are going to put some in the show notes for sure. There's no end to incredible books out there. So, you know, do your own work, come to your own process. Don't put that on other people to process that for you. I love that. So,
shall we just jump right in?
Yes. So why are we tarot readers? Why are we talking about trying to have a more inclusive tarot practice? Why is this important?
I mean, for me, it's important because I feel like as a witch, I want to create the world that I want to live in. And so that's going to mean not reinforcing oppression. And if you're not actively engaging to dismantle systems of oppression, then you're supporting it. So, I mean, I don't feel like you can be a spiritual person acting in integrity and not actively working to dismantle oppression. And I say that as someone who has really, like, I haven't always known that, you know, at all. Like, I always was like, oh, you know, I don't believe that, you know, patriarchy is right. Or I don't believe that racism is a good thing. And that thought, you know, that's enough. But that's not enough because, you know, I'm benefiting from a system that is racist and oppressive. And if I'm just tolerating that and I'm not actively doing anything about it, then I'm just standing by. I'm condoning it and benefiting from it. I believe in the work that I'm doing. And I want a better world. And I want to work to make it better. Why do you think this work is important?
You know, this year that we're coming out of 2018, we spoke about it earlier in the podcast. It's a justice year. And we've seen how hard it can be in the archetype of justice. We've seen how hard it can be being in the archetype of high priestess and justice together. And I think for me this year, the major theme, there were so many, but the theme of justice that came up for me is I have to have my actions and my behaviors aligned with my values and my judgments. It's really not enough for me to say, oh, you know, yeah, racism is bad, or, you know, F the government or whatever else I'm going to just go to and leave it. I have to actively take steps to repair or dismantle these systems in every facet of my life. A lot of this year has also had to do with a lot of unlearning, a lot of really questioning over and over, why did I do this practice? Or why did I believe this book that I read? Or why am I reacting this way? Or whatever. It's been a lot of kind of internal work, but it's been quite fruitful. So I want what I'm doing. I really do want my talk to match my walk. Like, I really want my values to be in alignment with my behaviors to be in alignment with my values. And personally, you know, seeing clients, I don't want to perpetuate oppressive systems in my work reading cards for people. I don't want to perpetuate systems of oppression with information that I'm writing or that I'm telling, you know, if I make art, all of it. I want to kind of deprogram and unlearn as best as I can. And there's this saying where there's no such thing as like a safe space, right? But I do like this idea of creating safer spaces. And I do really like this idea that a lot of activists use of causing less harm, you know, witches say cause no harm. And sometimes that's basically impossible living in the systems we do, driving cars and all of that stuff. But I want to cause less harm. I want to cause less harm to the world, to my clients, to myself. And one way of doing that is interrogating my own practices the words I use, you know, certain behaviors that I have, and thinking about deconditioning myself from white supremacist, capitalistic, patriarchal programming.
Mm. So what do we think are some of the most important practices, or what are some of the actions that you take, for instance, to make your tarot practice more inclusive? How do we do this?
So I'm going to start really micro. Great. And I'm going to zoom out.
Great. You lead and we will follow.
Okay. I'm a very bad dancer. You're the dancer of the group. But yes. Okay. I'll do my best. So, you know, I really just think about the basics. I think about the tools that I'm using. I think about the magical tools that I'm using. I've really stopped using a lot of tools that I have learned or I have read that are appropriative, such as white sage. I have drastically cut down on my crystal consumption, like drastically. I've started like giving some crystals away as well. But this is a tarot podcast. It's about the tarot deck, you know.
Sure. So it's evolving.
It's evolving. We're this is an evolving podcast. It's true. Right. Yeah. Don't box us into just a tarot box. There's all kinds of
we're
other boxes.
We're going in all directions.
So I guess I'm just going to tell my tarot story because I want to keep it really, really personal. For many years, I did use the Rider-Waite Coleman Smith deck. It was the deck that I felt most drawn to. I have many other decks, as many tarot readers do. This was the deck. Like, it was the deck that all the messages came through. I gave incredibly accurate readings. It really shaped who I was as a reader, but also as, like, a tarot theorist. It was probably about 2.5, maybe even 3 years ago that I started thinking, you know, I really shouldn't be using this deck in client readings. This deck has all white people. It has all skinny people. It perpetuates like heteronormativity for the most part. There are all these sort of, in quotes, problematic things to this deck. I'm not going to get into more details about it. I'm just going to leave that there.
I mean, for me, the most important thing is to just continue to educate myself, to continue reading and exercising my own internalized voices of curiarchy, because if I don't acknowledge that my ignorance, then I feel like I can't be of service. Also, continuing to educate myself helps me in readings when my clients bring up issues that feel to them like personal failures, but are often larger issues. I think that's like really one of the most essential things that I like to do in my readings, is to bring up that, you know, issues that we have about, for instance, anxiety, or issues that we have about like success at work or in our relationships, are often not just about our own personal failures, but are about larger social systems. So, for instance, I have several clients who are working through issues related to aging, feeling scared of it, wondering if they should get plastic surgery. But someone is benefiting from their fear of aging. Like, capitalist patriarchy, the curiarchy is benefiting from that fear. And it's not necessarily my clients who are benefiting. My clients aren't benefiting from feeling afraid of getting older. So recognizing the social systems that contribute to our personal problems helps us act in solidarity, I feel like. Or then there's the issue of manifesting, like that meme, maybe you manifested it, maybe it's white privilege.
That was by Rise Up Good Witch, Karina. She has a great podcast of the same title, Rise Up Good Witch. Just a little plug in there.
Oh, great. Thank you. So the idea of manifesting, using your will and the power of your visualization skills to get your dream, whatever, house, job, bank account, neglects that we live in oppressive systems that actively prevent some people from getting their basic needs met, much less manifesting a private jet. Children are not locked in cages at the border because they are negative thinkers or because they make some pre-birth contract with themselves to suffer in this lifetime. They are being locked in cages because of curiarchy and because of white supremacy. People are locking them in cages. It's not their attitude that is putting them there. It's the decisions and actions of the oppressor that is putting them there. So for me, like really thinking about larger social systems that are at work and at play in the sort of personal problems that people present.
Yeah, I think that's really amazing that you try to do that in your practice, Amanda. It's really great. You know, for me, I just truly try not to assume anything. So for me, that means I ask my clients their preferred name, because sometimes we're doing this online. I haven't met them before, so I don't know if it's their email. I also always, always ask clients their preferred pronouns and tell them my preferred pronouns as well. And then I try not to assume that one, they're going to want the private jet or want the monogamous relationship or want all of these kind of external trappings of what the culture sort of deems as, in quotes, successful. And I also, and this is a bigger topic, I don't assume that evolving is pain-free. And I don't assume that cards are bad or good, or I try to just take away any judgments or assumptions that I have about what the client would want. And I think more about how they're evolving and what they need to kind of receive and gain from the reading that will help them in their evolution. What I want to just like really clarify is when I say evolution, I'm not talking about becoming prettier or more wealthy or anything like that. I'm talking about getting closer to themselves, becoming more empowered, beginning to step into their own talents and their own gifts, and to just sort of try to be a guide for them to get back to themselves and to hear what they need to hear, and less about, you know, oh, good, you got the Ten of Pentacles, you're going to buy a house. Like, hi, I'm a tarot reader. Of course, I'm going to talk about those things, like, but I'm going to ask them what they're thinking about or ask them what topics are coming up for them. And yeah, if they do get all pentacles and they're thinking about work or they're thinking about money or worth, sure, we can go there. But I don't ever want to assume and be like, you want to buy a house or something like that, because not everyone wants a private jet. Mm. Hi, hello, no thanks, you know?
Well, you know what? What you're saying, I think, is so important. And I also just want to applaud that, because I also recognize that that comes at kind of a substantial risk, in the sense that, you know, people often really want your healer or your tarot reader to say everything's going to be fine, it's going to be pain-free for you. Like, focus on manifesting, you'll get what you want. You know, I feel like one of the things that I really try and do is to really own up to my own vulnerabilities, to own up that I'm fallible, to own up that I'm human, to not like set up a dynamic with my client where like I am the all-seeing, all-knowing eye, and they can just count on and rely on me. And the hard thing about that is that often, for instance, let's say I'm doing an Instagram post and I say something just really strident. I'm like, this is the way it is, and people should believe this. Occasionally I'll come out with a comment like that, and often people really respond to it. They love it. You know, people are like, yes. Like, if we look around in the world, you know, people like, for instance, our current president, like when people say things with authority, we just believe them. People just believe them. And they'll often like throw money at them because people want to sort of be led. And for me, I really just don't believe in that. Like, I really believe we all have to, as individuals, take responsibility for leading together, and that we're all fallible, that any person, there's no person that has so much authority or so much great deep spirituality that they are infallible. And the idea that there is, I think, is really troubling and leads to so much abuse. And so I really try not to replicate those systems of abuse with my clients. And, you know, from the very first moment that we interact, I try and create an atmosphere of co-creation and collaboration.
Yeah, to that point, you know, people seem a bit resistant. I don't mean people meaning clients, I just mean in general. People seem resistant to having complicated discussions that aren't always tied up in a neat bow. Tweets are much more popular. One-liners are much more popular. You know, if someone's telling you they know the answer and their answer is the right answer all the time, period, it might be time to like back slowly into the bushes. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's all.
No, but you see that all the time. Like, for instance, like I see a lot of sort of guru type folks on like Facebook being like, follow me, I know the answer, I'm going to make you $100,000. And if you don't have the money to come do my thing, then get a loan, you know,
really
max out
dangerous.
Your credit card. Yeah. I just cannot roll with that.
Actually, speaking of money, can we talk a little bit about accessibility?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good one.
That's just reminding me. That's another way. That's something else I just really think about a lot with my own tarot practice. In general, my readings are expensive. Mm-hmm. I don't feel bad about that. Like, I've studied the tarot for 7 years before I gave readings, and then I've read professionally for 7 years. So I'm at 14 years now mm-hmm. of serious study. So I'm okay with that. But I do think about offsetting the cost of my tarot readings with offering free things for people. So, you know, writing things for free on my blog, having a newsletter for free, or doing this podcast. Anyone can listen to it with a Wi-Fi or, you know, an iPhone, you know, all of these different things.
Yeah, I also think it's important to speak up about injustice, even if you're scared or uncomfortable. You know, those are things that it took me a while to figure out even how to do that, because I just wasn't certain about how to approach it. And then, you know, now I just try and risk it. Like, if I believe in something, I just want to come out and say it, even if I'm not going to say it right. And I think that really speaking up is really important. Also, paying people of color for their work and making reparations. You know, I have a certain amount of people a month that I mm-hmm. That I support just on a monthly yeah. basis.
Yeah,
I think that's important. And also, just from a magical perspective, giving back, like when you're doing spells, not just thinking about what you want, but thinking about dismantling the problem for all beings. So if, for instance, you want housing security, you want an apartment that's affordable, part of your magical practice then needs to be creating affordable housing for everyone. So that if that means canvassing, donating money, learning about like housing affordability in your area. One thing that I always do in my spells is to commit to doing labors on behalf of the working of the spell. So part of that might be committing to give money to people who are more vulnerable than I am, or do a piece of activism directly targeting income inequality. We can't just say like we want something personally for ourselves mm-hmm. without then also working to create that for everyone. That's like the way magical law works.
I love that so much. It just made me think that a lot of times when I'm doing a workshop or a meditation with a group of people, I always like at the end for all of us not just to raise and circulate our energy for ourselves and not just circulate and raise energy for the group, but to really envision it as a wave that is rippling out into the collective, to your point of following up with like action in the real world. Mm. Not that trance work or spell work is not the real world. I mean, tangible sort of phone calls or donations or Absolutely. Things like that. I think that is really important. I also think about when I'm doing my magical practices, I like to think of ways to honor the element that I'm working closely with. For example, you know, I really, as you may or may not know, I love working with the moon. And I think about really doing things for clean water. And doing things to protect water, you know, because that's the element that is most associated with that deity. So you could do something for earth or clean air. You know, there are all kinds of things we can do to kind of work with the element or the energies of the deity that we're calling in and we're calling on for help and support with. Mm, mm,
mm, mm. Snap, snap, snap.
You know, gentle listener, I'm also going to encourage you to listen critically and consume critically. Like, is your witch, astrologer, healer, do they never talk about where they get their sources from? Do they seem to come from nowhere? Do they speak as if they know everything but don't pay any airtime to their teachers? Do they never mention where they got their information? I totally understand channeling, downloading information. Totally get that. But the fact of the matter is that the majority of us who are doing this work had teachers, read books, tried different things. So if you are listening to someone and they never quote their sources, or they never cite their sources, or they never talk about where this idea stemmed from, you might want to back into those bushes. Like, you might want to just say no.
Bushes are getting
those
full.
Homer Simpson back into the bushes if you've ever seen that meme. But, you know, I just think it's important. Like, I think really carefully about what I consume. And if I'm consuming something, if I'm reading something, if I'm listening to something, you know, and if the person isn't quoting their sources or talking about where they got their information from or sharing their own experiences, yeah, I'm a little bit doubtful, you know. You know, if you're listening to this and you're a white person, if be careful not to be culturally appropriative. Be careful to not take a class from, you know, a Peruvian healer and then start teaching Peruvian healing.
Or worse, like read a book by a white person about Peruvian healing and then teach a class on Peruvian healing. Okay, so we could literally and would love to keep talking on and on about this for a really long time. We can't cover everything about this, but we wanted to talk about just a few little pet peeves or like little punctuation marks that kind of get on our nerves a little. I have one that I feel like a lot of people are going to feel sad about, but this is what I believe. Okay, so the word ajo, have you heard this?
You know, I haven't.
Okay, so a lot of the time I'll be, you know, in a workshop and it'll be all white people. And at the end, everybody will say this term, ajo. In theory, it's supposed to mean something like, yes, agreed, or amen. But it's some say this is Lakota word. Some say it's a Kiowa word. I can't get an exact confirmation on which language this word comes from. But I also have to say that most of the time when I hear it used, it's by white people. It means something like, yes, agree, or thank you, or amen. It's like a sacred yes. But I feel really uncomfortable about it because white people committed genocide against the Native Americans and still radically oppress them. And I mean, like, even if the most well-intentioned, like, German person ended all their spiritual group meetings with Lakayam, I just think that would be weird, you know?
It'd be kind of awesome, though. Oh, you mean like a German, not Jew. Sorry, I'm not following you. I'm a German Jew, so I'm like, yeah, Lakayam. I'm like, shalom, baby.
But no, like, I mean, like, if, like, a bunch of people whose parents were Nazis...
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank
ended
you for
all their spiritual meetings...
Right.
...with Lakayam.
Yeah.
I just think that would be a little strange.
I would agree with you.
And I just think it feels off to me. So... I try and find other ways of saying sacred yes. So might say things like, yes, agreed, thank you, blessings, hail, victory to the goddess. I think, you know, the wanting to say the word aho comes from a good place of not wanting to use the term amen. Because, amen to that. I don't think we should use that either. But I just think we should use our imaginations to come up with another term for a sacred agreement that isn't using a word. I mean, like, if you're an indigenous person, then you can use whatever word you want. But I just think it's strange when white folks use that word.
I mean, we could be here all day talking about strange and problematic terms that white folks use freely, one of which really baffles me, and I don't even really want to say it out loud, but it's a word that I see everywhere in spiritual spaces. I see it everywhere online. I've seen many brands name themselves this word, and that is, I'm putting in quotes, the word gypsy.
I'm glad you brought it up.
So, you know, wow, is it strange, not strange, that so many white women predominantly feel okay about freely using an actual racial slur. So I just want to briefly talk about gypsy in quotes. Again, I'm not even sure I should be saying it. I feel like really weird saying it. It is simply a shortened form of Egyptian. That's what many outsiders thought Romanis were. In the harmful history of, in quotes, gypsy, Jessica Reedy, who is Roma, tells us that the Romani people are an oppressed ethnic minority whose diasporic roots date back to 10th century India and are currently in the midst of a centuries-long human rights crisis. Many countries still sanction the persecution of the Roma people through lack of employment, lack of housing, and education discrimination, police brutality. So, you know, I would just encourage people, of course, to do more research and do more reading about this so they can connect to this topic, but just immediately stop using the word. Take it off your t-shirt, change your business name, change your Instagram handle, stop using it. When you see other people using it, tell them to stop using it. You know, if you've used this word for your branding, maybe part of your process making amends and peace with this change could be learning more about this, donating money to Romani groups who are fighting for equality, you know, go for it. The thing about language, if you're a white person listening to this, a lot of these terms, white people, were never yours ever to use. They didn't belong to you. So you don't need to feel over attached or uncomfortable changing them. You just get to change them. You just stop using them. Mm. You know, get into research mode with words if you feel off or you don't know where they came from. Know your origin. There's words like Eskimo, juju, Indian summer, grandfathered in, mumbo jumbo. I could keep going. All of these words have some incredibly ugly and racist origins, okay? So if you do research on them, you can learn. So it's on all of us to kind of pause and research, do our own work, and really just think about the words that we're using. This isn't a time to beat yourself up or feel ashamed or feel really bad, but it is time to kind of change your behavior, you know, with the language that you're using.
Yeah, it's actually an opportunity to be more precise, more generous, to create more inclusivity, like to create, like if, for instance, you say to yourself, oh, I'm using this word, the G word, because I just have total respect for the Roma people and I think their culture is so beautiful, then you might want to rethink using a word that they probably find really offensive and hurtful. And, you know, you could use instead the word wanderer, traveler, like seeker. You know, there's so many other things. It could push you to actually develop your practice in different directions and expand it while also creating a better and more beautiful world, the kind of world that you want to live in. So this doesn't have to be a moment where you feel really attacked and sad and guilty and ashamed. Like, we can just put that down and just actually roll up our sleeves and start doing better.
Love that. A woman.
So do you want to? Victory to the goddess.
Victory to the goddess. Let's talk about some people we really admire who are already doing this work and have been doing this work for quite a while.
Yes. People I love and respect. Okay. So there is Lisa Renee Hall on Instagram, Rachel Cargill on Instagram, Leah Garza. She just made this amazing compilation of decolonialist texts. So if you're interested in learning about like what it means to decolonize, she just made this whole comprehensive resource. Hopefully
let's link it in the
show notes. Yeah, we'll link it in the show notes. Brig Feltis on Facebook. Tika Lark, I follow her on Facebook. Alexis P. Morgan, follow her on Facebook. Jack Halberstrom, read his books. TJ One, follow him on YouTube. Sean King, follow him on Instagram. Desiree Attaway, follow her on Instagram. I could go on, but I thought I'd give you a chance.
Thanks. I mean, I start a little bit old school and then I get a little bit more current. Mm-hmm. You know, just some like classic texts, classic writers, bell hooks, Audre Lorde, James Baldwin, Angela Davis, Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. I love Virgie Tovar just came out with a book called You Have the Right to Remain Fat. It's awesome. Go read it. Adrienne Marie Brown, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Claudia Rankine. The last two books I read about race were So You Want to Talk About Race by Ijeoma Olio and White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo. There is Layla Saad, Shishi Rose, Erica Hart, Rachel Ricketts, Catrice Jackson, among many others. We'll link to them. Asali Earthwork has an incredible resource. It's an ongoing project that she's been doing where it's queer, trans, and people of color tarot. Mm. So she has a comprehensive resource list to tarot decks that are inclusive, tarot decks that have been created by people of color. And she extensively writes about those on her website. And I'll link this in the notes. I love Stay Woke Tarot, aka Rashonda Tramble. She has this great piece on her blog called Are You Afraid of the Dark? All about like light and dark, you know. She's also an incredible tarot reader. I got one of the best readings for my life from her. Obviously, I think of Edgar Fabian Frias.
Yes, they are amazing.
Follow them.
I love La Loba Loca. Do you follow her on Instagram? She works a lot with herbs and indigenous practices, and she's just really makes you think about your tarot practice. Dr. Frantonia Renice Charles, she speaks a lot on autostraddle. Desiree Attaway, Shonda Catrice, of course, the writer Gloria Anzaldúa is a favorite.
There's the Rise Up Good Witch podcast by Karina. Little Red Tarot is an amazing source for all things queer, inclusive tarot. And then I just have a couple more people. Latham Thomas is incredible in wellness. She does a lot of like doula activism work, and she's just incredible. Dory Midnight, Shane Case. And I would be remiss, to not mention Caliban and the Witch by Frederici.
Oh, yeah, we've got to say.
Sylvia Frederici. No, I'm just kidding. Sylvia Frederici also just came out with a book about witches that I can't wait to get my hands on and devour. But if you want to know more about the intersections between witchcraft, oppression, female,
capitalism,
femme,
and colonialism,
feminine, women's bodies.
The end of the commons as being one of the reasons for the oppression of witches, like essentially the commandeering of the common land by the capitalist class, the merchant class, and how that was like one of the main reasons why the witch persecutions existed, was in order to disenfranchise people from the land, as well as disenfranchising women from their own bodies and from their own reproductivity. Like, so the healers, witches, and midwives, is that the name?
I have that one right after it. Witches, Midwives, and Nurses by Barbara Ehrenreich and Deirdre English is also a book on that topic. So if you want to know more about kind of the history of oppression of witches and how it intersects with femme bodies, feminine bodies, women's bodies, magic, abortions, birth, herbalism, if you want to kind of get a really good grasp on how that is maybe still, I don't know, functioning in the world today, definitely read Caliban and the Witch and Witches, Midwives, and Nurses.
And did we say Angela Davis, Women, Race, and Class?
I said Angela Davis, but I didn't quote it. I didn't shout it. I also like Our Prison's Obsolete.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you can really read anything by Angela Davis, though.
Yeah, I think she's a good one to end with. What do you think?
I think we did the best we could with the time we had.
The best we could with the time we had. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for sticking with us and for doing this work. And
thank you for listening. Please know that this is just a snippet, a snapshot.
There's so much more to be done, and we will continue to do this. And
have a wonderful day.